Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political middle and have on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello. And hey, listeners. So glad you're with us.
And on the political right, John Dougal.
Welcome back. Great to be with you. I had two listeners reach out to me this week saying how much they love the show. I think it was because they like you too.
But
I was the messenger.
Like,
we love our listeners and lots to talk about today. And we're going to start by talking about this recent news that the United States has shut down the embassy in Kyiv, citing a possible, imminent Russian attack. Now, yeah. I've been to many, many embassies in foreign lands, kind of have a feel for what they look like, what it's like, interact with the Foreign Service people that are there.
Tell us a little bit about that. A lot of our listeners probably
haven't. Very secure. All of them have in the basement a grocery store that has like Campbell's soup and U.S. goods. They have the diplomatic pouch that brings all the, the secret things or whatever you want to bring into an embassy. But it's like a mini country within the embassy.
I actually lived down the street from the United States Embassy in Chișinău, Moldova, which is next door to Ukraine. And it is a different world.
Yeah. I think I've been in that embassy, by the way. And when I was there, they...
I haven't.
A lot of what they were dealing with was, U.S. currency.
Oh, yeah.
And sort of the investigations of people that were...
laundering money.
Yeah. So anyway, they're active places, but the people that work with them, I respect to the high heavens, and particularly when they're putting their lives at risk, which it sounds like this is, Shireen.
Yeah. So this is bad news on many fronts, and I very much agree with you. I think it's a world that a lot of people don't have insight into. I'm lucky because I mentioned I served in the Peace Corps, and Peace Corps is actually a pipeline for folks to go into embassy work. So I have a number of friends who work in embassies across the world. Had the opportunity to visit my friend whose very first assignment was at the Holy See, was in Rome, which was like an amazing
good
post.
Draw.
Yeah. But I'll just say that these are situations that can get incredibly dangerous really quickly.
Yeah.
Even though there's a lot of security and protection. And I guess I would put this in the broader context of this country has now just elected a duo, in particular, J.D. Vance, has been quite, I would say, a bit outside of his party, but very disinterested in supporting the Ukrainian people. So I think it's many compounding layers of what is likely to be an escalating and fraught situation.
Yeah. John, what makes it so difficult is that, you've got Russia right now taking down infrastructure in Ukraine, going after electric utilities and whatnot with winter coming. Right. Mm-hmm. And that, now President Putin has lowered his threshold for the use of nuclear weapons because he's mad at the U.S.
Right.
And
right.
It feels like
the U.S. said
real escalation.
Hey, Ukraine, you can now launch U.S. weapons into Russia.
Mm-hmm. Into Russia. Yeah.
Where before they said you can't.
Yeah.
You can use them, but you can't launch them into Russia.
Where does this go?
Well, I was just going to ask you. I know you met with a 4-star general recently.
Mm-hmm.
What are his thoughts? What are his lessons learned as he looks at history?
Yeah, he lamented that so much of the U.S. Involvement in foreign wars is a minimal approach, which just extends it and doesn't make it successful. And he's sort of in the camp of saying, if you're gonna be engaged here, you got to go
in.
Big.
All in, go big.
And so very much favors the U.S. Helping Ukraine, and essentially says Putin must be stopped. So
and probably believes the U.S. should have been more aggressive in helping Ukraine and allowing them to use weapons in Russia.
From day one. Well, we got other things to talk about. I wanted to talk about this terrorist-supporting organizations bill that, the GOP is trying to push through that would let Trump shut down nonprofits in our country. I think it's kind of an interesting thing. You don't think of, we think of all these impacts of this newly elected president, but you don't think of him as shutting down nonprofits.
Oh, I do. So I've been concerned about this.
That's right after
this.
He closes down the libraries and everything else, right, Shireen?
No. let's just say I'm realistically very concerned about issues like mass deportation, illegal potentially. Certainly thinking about the categorization of nonprofit organizations or being able to create this sort of doorway to say that nonprofits can be defined as terrorist supporting organizations. I just have to say that I think you should pay very close attention to the fact that every single one of our Utah legislators are likely completely comfortable with this. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a massive mistake. These kinds of legislation like this in authoritarian governments has been used to go after news agencies, mm-hmm. to go after organizations that provide food aids, potentially in countries where there may be, you know, globally or here domestically. I have to say, as a person who works in reproductive health, I am concerned about how this might be weaponized domestically. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that people are paying close attention to this issue.
Yeah. I mean, John, President Trump got the triage. I mean, he got all three, the House, the Senate, and the White House. And the American public is going to get what they voted for.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going to get it quickly. I mean, mm-hmm. he's jumping on this, and we'll talk in a little bit about his cabinet nominations. But you look here, you don't usually think about the president shutting down businesses. Mm-hmm. You think about that more as a state issue. They're created at the states, state law governments.
Yeah, especially humanitarian aid groups, news outlets, you know, these sorts of things.
Yeah, and so to Shireen's point, I also agree. I mean, come from a different perspective, but I'm concerned that the presidency, and I don't care which party it is, has become too powerful, too overreaching. And this is yet one more example.
Yeah. John, did you see that there's a House Democrat movement to make sure it's abundantly clear that President Trump can't run for a third term? The issue is, are your terms
consecutive?
Because they
weren't consecutive or not.
Yeah. Did you see this?
I saw. I thought we thought it was kind of clear or not, but I guess I'm not sure what the statute will do relative to what the Constitution says.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's more for show, and yeah. I doubt it's going to pass. So
go big picture with me for a minute. I haven't been with the two of you for a few weeks. Peggy Noonan.
We were unsupervised.
Peggy Noonan wrote about this election that it was a path election, not a person election. And she's basically saying that millions of Americans who do not like Donald Trump voted for him because they want the path. Mm. And I thought that was interesting.
I think it's interesting. I've been reflecting a lot on, you know, I would say things that I've said politically and beliefs that I've held that I'm starting to question. In particular, and I heard Democrats say this, and I think occasionally Republicans will say things like, there's more that unites us than divides us. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that's a lie. Hmm. I think that we experience similar challenges and complications in our lives. Mm-hmm. I think we would all agree that healthcare is too expensive. I think we can all understand there's a housing crisis in this mm-hmm. country. I think morally we agree that some wars seem justified, others simply do not. I think that we can agree on particular issues, mm-hmm. but
or concepts.
Concepts. Yes. Mm-hmm. But I have to say there's something fundamentally disconnected between the fact that I wake up every morning and I don't think that an immigrant is in this country trying to take my job. I don't think I'm at risk by the bathroom that I choose and select. I don't think other people are out to get me. I don't think that this is a country. I can see that there's an unraveling of mm-hmm. our democratic processes, but I don't think this is a country in decline.
Does it bother you that eggs are so expensive? Does it bother you?
Yeah,
you know, the inflation part.
It does. Yeah. But I'll also say we've spent a lot of time not paying for what things actually cost. Mm-hmm. And we think about jobs going overseas. We think about, you know, the way that our world has been kind of, it's not artificially been created cheap, but like some of the ways by which we've come to understand that products are cheap mm-hmm. or food is cheap are maybe ways that we fundamentally...
A little distorted.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. John, your take on this, a path election versus a person election, because what happened is modern liberalism got cast aside in a dominant way.
Yeah, and that's... Shireen and I have talked about this, but absolutely... There were folks that were voting for Trump because they thought he's great. And there are folks that were voting for Trump because they don't like Biden. Mm-hmm. And Kamala basically said, I'm going to do the same thing Biden's doing. When asked, would mm-hmm. you do something
never
different?
Never differentiated enough.
No. So she didn't differentiate. And so to them, it was, I'm not happy where I'm at. I want something different. And he's the path that's going to give me different.
Let me do one other big thinker, David Brooks. He's written that we've entered a period of political whitewater. Mm. He's saying that this is chaos, not fascism.
Okay.
He says that disorder will shake everything loose. And then he has this chilling comment. He says, if you hate polarization, just wait until we experience global disorder.
Well, and what we're talking about here, isn't just a U.S. issue. Mm-hmm. And it's not just things that will flow out of the U.S. We're seeing similar dynamics in other countries.
Yeah.
Agitation
really
with the elites,
because
with the elites lecturing them.
Polarization's already bad enough, but if you start to think that we don't have norms globally, then it gets really crazy.
Yeah, I think that's where we're headed. I guess I just want to give this like element of hope, though, given how I'm starting to think about things. I do ultimately believe that you can create stability, care, and kindness in your world.
Mm-hmm.
And as frustrating as I kind of find all this to be, I understand, I feel like the way that we got here was through that folks are experiencing things that are difficult. I mm-hmm. understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have strong men, right? Like a strong man. So a notion of power coming in and saying, okay, I'm going to go with that ideology. I'm going to go with power.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell you, I don't think it's going to get us very far. It's gotten us here and this is a mess. So I'm wondering if I can invite people, as like woo as this may sound, to lead with love.
Yeah.
What's that
going
to look like?
But here's a question for you. Back to the political kind of side, Shireen. And I do want to talk about that more, you know, comfort side. But the Democratic Party used to stand for the working class. It doesn't anymore. It used to stand for spending. It doesn't anymore. The Republicans spend just as much. It used to be the anti-war party.
Yeah.
It's not so much.
Yeah.
What does it stand for?
Okay.
You know, what does it mean now?
I'll just say that the message and the product are different. When you say the Democrats used to stand for the working class, under the Biden administration, child poverty was cut in half. Okay. And in fact, that didn't continue because Republicans wouldn't continue to support funding for programs mm-hmm. that we saw empirically
mm-hmm.
reduce child poverty. When we think about the CHIPS Act, that's bringing jobs back to the United States. And I do think a lot of this.
So you see, it's like a paradox. People aren't seeing it correctly.
They don't seeing it. And also Democrats aren't messaging it correctly.
Yeah, yeah. John,
right?
How do you react to that? Because a lot of the post-election thing that I've read is just basically that the Democratic Party needs, you know, a biopsy, medical term.
Well, there's some of that. It's interesting. I see some of the, if you will, liberal elites say, I can't believe they're voting against self-interest. They're looking at the blue-collar worker going, they're voting against their self-interest. And yet the liberal elites are also voting against their self-interest because they're voting for abortion. They're voting for immigration, whatever it might be. But they're not caring about the economic impacts of tax increases on them and so forth. And so it's...
Okay.
Lots of folks are voting against, quote unquote.
Do not get twisted. Abortion is an economic issue.
But go to Shireen's point.
It's
about,
viewed much more as a social issue for a lot of folks.
What is your leading with love? Is that what you said?
I guess I would just say it's going to get chaotic. It's going to get difficult. There are going to be mass deportations in this country. We had a woman here in Salt Lake City flee to a church during the first Trump administration. That is just the tip of the iceberg, I think, for what people are about to see. And I would just encourage people that you can take steps to live closer to your values.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope people are ready to do that.
Let me flag one
other
quick thing.
And call a spade a spade if you see it.
Call a spade a spade.
When you're talking chaos, let me come back to information. We used to have trusted groups.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the news media. It could be universities and so forth. They're no longer trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, if you will, when the average person is trying to assimilate all this information, you have information overload. So they don't know who to trust. So now they're trying to view it all themselves and decide for themselves, but it's overload and they don't know what's correct, what's not.
Yeah.
But they don't trust the sources that have been trusted for decades in the past.
I'll just say from the political middle that never have families and churches and let's say community organizations been more important.
More important.
Yeah. Hey, let's take a break and then we're going to talk cabinet appointments. This should get interesting.
Giddy up.
Stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I'm in the political center, and we are talking cabinet appointments by the incoming president, Donald Trump.
Still
and
feeling like you're in the political
been
center
a
when
list.
You hear it?
It's been a list.
Okay.
And
well, man, he's doing it fast, too. He's not wasting any time getting these names out
and
there.
Matt Gaetz is you know, the headliner here,
Wait,
being appointed to be the head of DOJ. You know, this is having such an amazing sort of like, I don't know, political strategy to it, because it seems like Donald Trump made this appointment knowing that he wouldn't be confirmed and getting him out of the House.
Oh, you think? Wow. I think that's optimistic thinking.
You do, yeah? Well, the line of thinking
goes like this.
The House, I mean, this guy's a troublemaker in the House, and he went after the Speaker, you know, and got him out of there.
Kevin McCarthy.
And so he's a troublemaker, and now he's in no man's land. And
oh, he's going to campaign for Florida governor.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, what do you guys think?
As the victim.
I don't think he'll be confirmed. And I think it gives a big open spot for potentially our Senator Mike Lee to be the attorney general.
Okay. So also troubling. I guess I just want to say that Matt Gaetz is in the middle of a damaging ethics report that is actually being held in the House Ethics Committee. They voted today to not. So it's stuck there to not release this. Though it has been leaked, and there are many sources that show that he had sex with a 17-year-old. This is deeply concerning. Unfortunately, it is quite in line with concerning behavior across a number of these cabinet appointments, people with really troubling histories around sexual assault and sexual violence. The other thing that the report included, was money that was paid out from him to keep women silent. This is who is left that wants to surround Donald Trump in positions of power in this country.
Well, and it's also so interesting because, you know, it's chaos.
Yeah.
Because you know, the House ethics, they might not turn over their things, but the Senate confirmation people can call in whoever they want to testify.
Yeah.
I can think back at Supreme Court nomination processes and those hearings and everything that came out during them.
I'm always asking you guys questions, but I want you to ask me questions about HHS and CMS.
Okay.
So this is RFK Jr. for Health and Human Services and Dr. Oz for Medicaid and Medicare.
I think Matt Gaetz is a ridiculous point. And so I'm just curious whether this is Trump just trying to draw attention here so folks say all the rest of it looks normal or if there's something else. But my key point I want to just flag is, you know, if we're concerned about Matt Gaetz or others being at the head of these organizations, then this goes to my point. I'm concerned with the behemoth that we have created in the federal government because then it gets turned over to folks that Shireen might like and I vehemently disagree with or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I guess I would say, though, in past examples, people that you may disagree with that I would support typically come in with a wealth of knowledge or experience. And actually, you also worked for somebody who ran HHS, who I would politically disagree with, but would say came with a wealth of knowledge and expertise in health.
Had run an insurance company.
In health systems.
Yeah. had been a governor and administered Medicaid.
So what does Governor Leavitt know?
Yeah.
Mike's a great guy.
So. Right. So, and I can think, you know, for me, a person whose deep expertise comes from the insurance world would not be my first pick, but this is a person who I believes in the system.
But Medicare is insurance.
And Medicare is insurance. Yeah. So what do you think,
well,
Natalie,
and this choices? Is why I said to ask me because I live there. But I, you know, I spent a couple of years at HHS, amazing federal agency. While I was there, the budget at HHS surpassed the GDP of Italy. Just gives you a sense of what a big, you know, entity it is.
Yeah.
Has FDA, CDC, National Institutes of Health, Medicaid, Medicare. The people who support public health and all the progress we've made in public health are just reeling over this. And go all the way back to polio, right? What we've done to eradicate these crippling, to use an intentional term, diseases. So this is, from my perspective, really bad news, but I take heart, and John won't like this, but the career service workforce, what they call the senior executive service.
I thought you were going to say the deep state.
Yeah, I think they're amazing. I think these are very talented, skilled public servants. I didn't know them as anything other than incredible professionals.
Yeah.
I'm not talking, you know, the mid-tier, low-tier. I'm talking the senior executive service. It's a designation you get in the federal government. They know what they're doing. They know how to move from administration to administration. They're incredible professionals. You don't get into SES unless you're a professional.
Right.
And I think that we'll be okay.
Well, the intent of Project 2025 is to remove those individuals from their positions.
Yeah. I would not support that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what, again, this country and this stage has voted for.
John, you want to say anything about these public health appointments?
Well, I mean, RFK, you don't like him, but this goes back to my point I made earlier, okay? here you have somebody who potentially is going to lead this massive organization you vehemently disagree with. And so then I come back and say, probably part of the problem is the agency is too big and has too much power.
Yeah. And in this case, I'm glad the agency has power.
Yeah.
And what'll happen, you know, because HHS secretaries have to do interesting things. We have to decide in like March what flu vaccine we're going to commit to for the flu season several months later. And he has to sign something that commits a lot of money to the egg farms that are producing the vaccine, you know. And so
when you look at this,
he's going to get schooled and he's going to see evidence and he's going to. My prediction would be that he won't be as bad as you think.
Okay, so when you see this, why do you think Trump nominated somebody like that to HHS?
Because he tears things down. Because he's not a builder. Because this is a guy that sows chaos everywhere he goes.
It's on brand. How about TV personality Dr. Oz to lead Medicare and Medicaid services?
And again, I think that the career service workforce will help us there. So who knows? Okay. What about Department of Defense? This was an interesting pick. I don't know this guy, Pete Hegseth.
Yeah. Well, so you're not a Fox News watcher is what that tells me.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not. But I have read that he has tattoos associated with white supremacy and neo-Nazi movements and the Jerusalem cross. I'm kind of surprised that this is a pick that the president would make. But
are you?
I am. Yes. It didn't happen the first time, Shireen.
Yeah. Well, the first time, though, again, I think that there were people who thought, okay, we'll bring our expertise, we'll bring our knowledge, we're willing to co-sign this administration and have now seen that Donald Trump is a traitor to this country who does not care about our democratic processes.
So, John, I'm saying the people that are in public health are, you know, just incredibly disillusioned by this. And now I'm thinking the people that are involved in national security, national defense.
Well, anytime you have a change, you're going to have people that are nervous. What does that mean? What is the new administration going to bring in? And then you're going to have some folks that say, this is so outside the mold. How do we deal with this?
Yeah.
But part of the thing, and I think in some cases, you're right. I think in some cases, Trump wants to create chaos.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, I think he really wants to shake up the bureaucracy and say, we're going a different direction.
So now, you go to the department.
Part of that is trying to get out of wars and reduce it. Now, whether or not that'll be successful, that'll be a whole nother question.
But part of it is also rewriting the tax code to benefit billionaires and hurt families here. I got a message from a parent here in Utah who has a disabled child. Because of the changes that Trump made to the tax code, the way that they were able to basically identify their child as disabled in their taxes provided money back to them to be able to take greater care of that kid. She is now terrified that she is not going to have a way to provide the financial support for her family going forward. It's gotten harder every year. It got a little better back under Biden, but not back to what it was before Trump made these changes. These are your neighbors. These are people in this state who are suffering from an administration that prioritizes billionaires, the billionaire class.
But Shireen, we had Biden, who his agenda was punishing and crippling the economy, and everyday Americans said,
"You're living in a fantasy, John."
No.
Natalie if we are living in a crippling economy.
You're now coming across as one of those elites lecturing the everyday American I am so sick of this. I am voting for him. Whether or not I like him, I'm picking that path to what Natalie said earlier. And so this is the reality that people are dealing with is they would rather have that path than the path they were on.
So, John, help me with this one. Just in terms of competency in these appointments. And I know you don't like the Department of Education, but Linda McMahon, who's the CEO of the World Wrestling Entertainment Company,
Board of Education for a while.
His education pick. Wow. What do you think she's going to do?
Well, she's a school choice advocate. Mm-hmm. I think she's going to promote that. I think there's going to be a big push. I mean, clearly Trump has talked about getting rid of and stopping funding schools that are pushing critical race theory and what he calls the transgender insanity. So I think she will be going down that path. Okay. But from my perspective, working to get the federal government out of the education arena, I think is a path.
Scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate these cabinet picks?
I think there are some that I would put at a 9, and there were some that are like -45.
Yeah, interesting. I'm probably about a 3, 2.5 on these. The one I do like that I live with is Doug Burgum, Department of Interior.
I like Marco Rubio, too.
Okay, Shireen.
Okay, Doug Burgum, the governor of my home state. This is a person whose expertise is oil and gas. So I think you can anticipate that more of our public lands will be, up for grabs, but not for you, not for the general public anymore. But I, I guess in terms of competency, he seems less outside of it. Does it could be worse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was kind of wishing he was commerce myself.
Last minute of the program, let's talk about a local pick that's really, I think, important, and that is Senator Lee picked to be the Senate Energy Natural Resources Committee chair. That's a big responsibility. If he stays in the Senate, that's just my opinion that the Trump administration is going to want him. But that's a really big committee assignment, Shereen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that he will deliver for the state of Utah, and by that I mean Utahns, not just companies that will continue to profit.
Yeah, John, 20 seconds. What do you say on Senator Lee here?
Energy is critical. Even Democrats are waking up to the path we're on for the energy agenda is not working. We got to do something different. And so this is a great pick for Utah.
His quote, this is Senator Lee, time to get to work and unleash American energy. I'm hearing people call this the energy decade. And so we need energy. Let's see what happens. Hey, lively discussion. Thanks, everybody. Natalie Gochner in the Political Center with John Dougal and Shereen Gourbani. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.